morning, everyone. It's 8:33 today on June 30th.
Bring your mic down.
You want to hear what I say?
Yeah.
Morning. It's about 8:33 on June 30th, 2013, and this is the time and place scheduled at the Public Service Commission hearing room in the state capital of Bismarck, North Dakota, for the hearing in the matter of Public Service Commission versus Northern Excavating Company, Inc., in cases number GS-13884, GS-13885, GS-14230, and the OAH numbers 2014-0518, 2014-0519, and 2014-542. These proceedings were continued from the February 3rd, 2015 hearing, 1 p.m. hearing. My name is Rosellen Sand. I'm an administrative law judge from the Office of Administrative Hearings, and I'm here just to be a procedural administrative law judge, and I'm designated to preside over this matter. At this time, if I could have the parties state their appearances for the record and tell me who is with them, starting with the counsel for the PSC.
Mitch Armstrong, Specialist Attorney General for PSC Advocacy Staff. With me is Victor Shook, a Public Utility Analyst for the Commission.
Okay. And also Sarah Kuntz?
Yes, and Sarah Kuntz from my office is also with us. She's a law clerk at my office.
Is that Sarah with a H? Okay. Thank you. Then Northern Excavating.
My name is Robert Lindberg.
Okay.
My wife Donna here.
Okay. Robert and Donna, thank you. And we have advisory council here today too.
Casey Fury, advisory counsel for the commission. To my right is Patrick Fawn. He is the director of compliance and competitive markets here at the commission. Your Honor, I would ask that Patrick be able to ask questions as well during the proceeding.
Commissioners?
Yes.
That will be allowed.
In addition, for the record, John Hsu will also be advisory counsel in this matter.
Okay. Thank you very much. Also present today are the members of the Public Service Commission, with the Chair, Julie Fedorchek, with Commissioner Brian Kalk, who is holds the damage prevention portfolio, and Commissioner Randy Christman. And beginning with Commissioner Kalk, I will ask for Commissioner's opening comments, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. We met a similar group not too long ago dealing with some but at that time, alleged violations for the company against reservation telephones. So we've laid out a whole list of cases, and the commission issued a decision on that case. And that day, quite honestly, got a little bit long, so we ended up consolidating and moving into this case today, which is really, as the judge laid out, three cases more dealing with natural gas infrastructure. So I look forward to the advocacy staff, advisory staff doing their thing, hearing from Mr. and Mrs. Lindberg. The one thing that the commission was just had a hearing Friday in Williston, and yesterday we were up in Rolette. And on Friday we had Commissioner Crispin's mother-in-law there, and Julie grew up in Williston. And yesterday we were up in Rolette. My aunt was there. And so North Dakota is a pretty small state. And so it's ironic that Mr. and Mrs. Lindberg, in full disclosure, I've known them for many, many years. And it's a unique scenario that you've got a case where North Dakota, everyone knows everyone. But the law is pretty clear in what North Dakota does and doesn't do. So we've got a series of cases today that the company MDU has filed some concerns they have about potential violations of the North Dakota one-call law. The state law gives the North Dakota Commission the jurisdiction to make decisions on this. So we'll hear from the company as well as Mr. Armstrong and his folks why they think there have been violations. And I imagine we'll hear from Mr. Lindberg that maybe he might see it a different way. So, or maybe he might see it the same way. I guess we'll wait and see. But it always, for me, the big thing is that we get a full record of what happened or didn't happen. We ask our questions, and we make a good decision and enforce the law that we're given the jurisdiction to do so. So thank you all for being here today, and I look forward to a good hearing.
Commissioner Fedorchek.
Good morning, everybody. I, too, look forward to a productive hearing this morning, come into this with an open mind, and look forward to hearing from both parties what you have to say and reaching a fair and efficient decision in a short order of time. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Christman.
Just welcome the Lindbergs, and I think everything else has been said. I have nothing else to add.
Thank you very much. Well, this is a hearing that comes about as a result of a complaint by the Public Service Commission against Northern Excavating Company Incorporated. And the allegation is that Northern Excavating Company Incorporated violated North Dakota Century Code Chapter 4923 on three complaints that have been consolidated for this hearing. And the Public Service Commission is seeking to impose a civil penalty on each of those complaints. I just want to briefly run through the hearing procedure. First, the Public Service Commission will be given an opportunity to present its case against Northern Excavating, and calling any witnesses and presenting the evidence that it has. Each witness called by the state will be placed under oath and will be subject to cross-examination by Mr. Lundberg. And also, advisory council have an opportunity to ask questions of the witnesses as well. Thereafter, the commissioners will be able to ask any questions that they may have. I may have questions, or more likely I may not have questions, but then we will go through that cycle again until everyone has asked the questions that they need the answers to and those answers are given. Once the state has completed its case, then Mr. Lundberg for Northern Excavating will be given an opportunity to present his case, call witnesses, and present any evidence that he has. And again, each witness will be subject to cross-examination by the advisory council and the state, as well as the commissioners. All right. If there's documentary evidence, in other words, papers that we're going to submit in as exhibits, we need to have six copies, if that's possible. And the rules of evidence, I understand, will apply in this case. Is that correct, Mr. Armstrong?
Yes.
Okay. I won't make a decision, obviously, and I don't think the commissioners will make a decision today because I am merely procedural. I don't have anything other than to make sure that we have an orderly hearing and that information that needs to get to the record gets in.
Judge.
Yes.
If I could interrupt for one brief second, advocacy staff is willing to waive the rules of evidence if Mr. Lindberg and the commission prefers to.
Okay. Okay, then we'll waive the rules today. So that we won't have to argue about which rules apply that you don't even know exist. All right, thank you. Okay, and just one thing. Once the commission does reach a decision, it'll issue it. And if someone's not happy with that decision, they have a right to request a rehearing and to reopen or appeal the decision to the district court under North Dakota Century Code Chapter 2832. If something is taken up on appeal, the expense of transcribing the hearing today would be on the person taking the appeal. Now, before we get started, are there any questions from anyone about the procedures?
None from advocacy staff.
Mr. Lindberg, none. Commissioners.
Just to clarify, Your Honor, yes. You read three different case numbers. Don't we have six different case numbers?
Yes, we have another hearing later.
So we're not going to consolidate those? I wasn't sure how we were going to do that. That's, I guess, a good... whatever we have to do, I just want to make...
Yeah,
I guess I'd forgotten.
I have two cases and whatever the parties wish to do.
I can make an explanation, I guess.
Please do so.
The commission's rules allow for consolidation of cases with common issues of fact. I guess leading up to the hearing, I believe it was determined that the two cases were separate in issues of fact because the first one, the one we were dealing with, addresses either violations for not having a ticket or outside the scope of the ticket. The second one, group of cases, deals with alleged not digging in a careful and prudent manner. So that's why they're separated the way they are.
I guess I'd forgotten that we'd done that, so I want to make sure that we didn't miss something. So thank you.
Chairman.
Is there a way to consolidate these? I remember we kind of went through this last time, and it seemed like we were covering the same material, at two different times, which seemed a little bit...
redundant?
Yeah, redundant and difficult for the parties.
It's everybody's preference to consolidate all the cases. We can do that. I think the exhibits are consecutively numbered already and pre-marked or, one through whatever in each case. That might make for a little confusing bouncing back and forth, but I'm sure we can work through it.
I'd look at our general counsel, Casey, and see what her thoughts are, too, if there's something. I'm going down the wrong road here, though, too.
The question really becomes if there's any prejudice to the party. So if Mr. Lindbergh is willing to consolidate, then I see no problem in doing so.
Five of the cases are in one locality, and one is outside that occurred in Bismarck. So, but they're all...
So they're going to leave it up to you, Mr. Lindbergh. What do you want?
Consolidate them all. Oh,
all right, let's do that. Then I'm just going to add to the record that we will consolidate, in addition to the first three cases, GS-13-886, GS-14-229, and PU-14-671, which are Office of Administrative Hearings case numbers 2014-052, 2014-041. And 2014-0543. And I'm going to see if we maybe need to just take a short break so people can organize their things. Would that be helpful?
Yes, that would be necessary.
Okay, thank you.
Did you read three cases off or four?
All three.
134 was unconsolidated, and that was the RTC one. We did the second round.
Oh, 134 is one of the ones that's done. Okay. I have
trouble with all those. Especially because they're not consecutive.
Yeah.
Mr. Lindbergh, for the second group of cases, these are re-additional. Mr. Farrell and Mr. Baxter, are you still on the phone?
If I go over, I'm afraid I look like I'm giving them information, but would you just tell Mr. Lindbergh his microphones don't pick up very well? So when he talks, he has to kind of have it pretty close to his mouth.
Why don't we need it or not? It looks like we probably have enough binders. Okay. That judge doesn't need one. I got the exhibits.
Okay. What is it?
So this is the binder for the other three.
That's the same as this?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
But there's additional exhibits.
Right. I'll make some copies if you already have that, just so you don't have to have another binder.
You think they're still on the phone?
Was that the whole thing over again?
This is the whole thing, if that works for you. I should know if you already had some notes on those existing ones. But yeah, that's fine.
It's the whole thing, only different?
It's the same, only different. We're taking out exhibits 1 through 5, and then we're adding in two additional exhibits.
Okay, I'll take that one.
Okay.
We're back in. All right, thanks. Hello?
Yeah, bye.
Hello.
Yeah, I can hear you on the phone. You're good, Ken.
To talk.
Isn't this real life?
Will there be a demonstration of the other sample of our sure. lunch or something?
What I do to keep my softball kids paying attention, I go out and stand there and juggle until they get to their position.
We can relabel them for here too if we need to. I have labels if we need them.
There would be 2, 6 through 20s. Sure they do.
Mr. Lindbergh, you look like you're ready.
Yeah, I'm
all right. Ready. Mr. Armstrong?
Yes.
Ms. Ferrer? Yes. Are you ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Commissioners? All right, then. Any other questions about the procedure that we're going to be following today?
Just thank everyone. I think that'll make better for everyone and be more efficient here.
I agree. I remember last time it was like watching reruns, kind of.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, if not, we can proceed, Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I'd like to give a brief opening and maybe address the exhibits now that we've consolidated everything. I'm still going to approach the two cases kind of in the clumps that I discussed earlier. The first group are the what I call the 884 cases, so it would be 884, 885, and 230. Those cases deal with either no tickets or allegations of outside the scope of the tickets. In those cases, we do have exhibits 1 through 20 presented, and I believe everybody's got copies. The originals are with the judge. The second group of cases are the 886 cases. Two of those are in Ross, North Dakota, and one of them is down by Apple Creek in the Bismarck area. Those are the cases where we're alleging failure to dig in a careful and prudent manner.
Excuse me, Judge and Counsel. I only have case exhibits 1 through 15 on the first batch that you mentioned.
There should be, if you look in the front of your binder, Commissioner, I believe there should be 16
okay.
through 20.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I was following you. Thank you.
I mean, that'll be the same in the second group of cases are the 886 cases, and these had previously been consolidated with case number 134 that was already decided by the commission. So the first five exhibits in this were related to 134, so we've pulled those, and the exhibits start with 6, and they go through 24. My intent would be to have the first 884 cases be exhibits 1 through 20, and then the other group follow it and just be 6 through 24, and I'll definitely do my best to try and mention which case we're dealing with, because we do have two witnesses over the phone who have the exhibits available to them. We intend to present testimony from Lehman Farrell and Dana Baxter over the phone. They were kind of the field personnel who either supervised or responded to the issues with these strikes up in the Ross area for MDU. Paul Riley will testify. He's a manager up there and oversaw, fixing the damages and also invoices and repairs for them. For the Bismarck cases, we'll be calling Craig Lowstreeter and Cordell Weist, who have similar positions in the Bismarck area. By consolidating the two cases, it'll help us not have to call Mr. Farrell, Mr. Baxter, and Mr. Riley twice today. So we'll proceed in that manner. And I guess at this time, since we've consolidated the cases and everybody's agreed to waive the rules of evidence, I would just ask that Exhibits 1 through 20 and then 6 through 24 be admitted.
All right. And Mr. Lindbergh, do you have objection to having those exhibits admitted?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Judge, may I make two more suggestions? One, for the folks on the phone, it's really tough to hear the conversation if we're not really close to the mic. And so I would just urge all who are talking to speak up close to the mic so they can follow on the phone. And then secondly, I don't know if this is in order or not, but could we label the first batch A, 1 through 20, and then the second one B, 1 through 24 or something, so that we can keep it straight as we move forward?
That will work for me.
All right. That's what we will do. Okay, but you have no objection.
No.
Ms. Furr?
No objection, Your Honor.
All right. They will be all admitted. And can I just clarify one thing?
Yes.
The first five exhibits on the B list aren't being admitted for this hearing because they were admitted at the last hearing?
Correct.
And so it's really 6 through 24?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Armstrong.
Advocacy staff calls Lehman Farrell.
Mr. Farrell.
Yes.
All right. In North Dakota, whenever someone testifies at an administrative hearing, one of my responsibilities is to inform them of the penalties for perjury. And those penalties are up to $10,000 and up to 5 years in prison, and it is a Class C felony. Understanding those penalties, do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give concerning the matter being heard shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the pains and penalty of perjury?
Yes.
Okay, and can you maybe speak up just a little bit, because I'm having difficulty hearing you, and I'm sure the recording equipment is as well.
All right.
Okay.
We can do that.
Oh, that's better. Thank you. Mr. Armstrong, please go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Farrell, could you state and spell your name, please?
My name's Lehman Farrell. It's spelled L-E-A-M-O-N. Last name Farrell, F-E-R-R-E-L-L.
And where are you testifying from?
I'm testifying from the MDU office in Wollaston, North Dakota.
Are you employed?
I am employed through MDU.
What is your position?
I am a working lead foreman.
What do you do in that position?
I install gas service lines, mains, and I repair gas service lines and also mains.
How long have you held that position?
Just over 5 years.
The first group of cases I would like to talk to you about, Mr. Farrell, or actually the first case, I guess, is GS-13-885. And for everybody's information, this would be in Exhibit Group A. Mr. Farrell, were you called out on October 15th, 2013, in relation to a problem with a natural gas line near 3rd Street and Railroad Avenue in Ross?
Yes, I was.
Could you take a look at Exhibit 7? It would be A7. Yours would just say 7.
Okay, I have it in front of me here.
Is this a document that you prepared?
It is.
Could you tell us what this document is?
This is a document for repairing a damaged line of our that we own, the company owned properties.
Did you go out to the site the day of this damage?
I did. I was on site.
Could you tell us what you found out at the site?
When I arrived at the site, I found that there was actually two hit gas lines, and they were both blowing gas, so we immediately squeezed both of them off so we could make it the area safe.
Was Northern Excavating on site when you got there?
Northern Excavating was on site, one of their gentlemen, and I spoke to him. What I have here is his name was Kyle, and I did not get a last name.
What did Kyle tell you?
What? I asked Kyle why he was digging where he was digging, because there was no locates that I could see, no markings on the ground, no flags of any kind. I asked if he had a locate ticket number. He did not. He said he did not have one, and I asked how come he was digging, and he told me that he was told to go dig this service or a water line in. So there was, he said there was his people, I don't know who it was, told him that it was all clear to go ahead and start digging.
Were you involved in repairing that damage?
I was.
Can you tell us what had to be prepared or repaired?
Both lines were damaged sufficiently enough that I had to fix both lines. Therefore, I had to cut the lines out and redo them. The 3-inch is not a common line that we have, so I had to do a little hunting for the couplings to fix it, but we did get it fixed, and we use electric fusion couplers to repair the on-site, on-job, the on-the-site things. Excuse me, I'm getting a little nervous.
That's okay. Just take your time. Were you able to, well, what kind of lines did you repair?
They were poly lines, both plastic lines. And like I say, they were our main lines feeding the elevators, I believe.
I'd like to move on with you now, Mr. Farrell, to case number 886. And if we refer to exhibits, it'll be in the what we've called, told you is the afternoon binder, so to speak.
Okay.
Had you also been called out on October 9th, 2013, in relation to a problem with a natural gas service line near Central Avenue and 111 3rd Avenue East in Ross?
Yes, I was.
And if you'd also look at Exhibit 7, which would be B7 for everybody in the room's information.
All right.
Is this a document that you prepared?
It is.
And is that the same sort of report of damage as you just discussed in the previous case?
It is, with the exception that there was locates on this job. There, I had the locates were there, and they just it was a blatant dig through. It looked like to me, and this is my opinion, but they had dug through it, bent it back, and had it clamped off so it wasn't blowing gas anymore, and then they continued doing their work.
So you said there were locates. Could you describe for us the manner in which it was located? What equipment was used and how it was located?
There were, it was a service line, and they were painted. There was yellow, yellow paint on the ground, also flags on the ground. I could see them clearly.
And was the excavation near the markings?
Yes, it was. It was, they went right through it. It was the operator, his name was Shannon Severson, and he had no explanation.
What type of line was damaged in this incident?
This was a service line to a single residence.
How did it appear to you the line had been damaged?
They had dug through it with a track hole. They had ripped it right in half.
They meaning Northern Excavating?
They meaning Northern Excavating, yes.
What had to be done to repair this damage?
Again, I had to dig back, squeeze it off, take their stuff off of it. I had to blow the line out because I don't know from the house back to the damage part of it, get all the dirt out, and then do the same thing with couplers and everything. This is also a plastic service line. So I spliced in a piece of plastic.
So the questions I have.
Okay, thank you.
Stay on the line, Mr. Farrell. Other people will have questions.
Yep. All right, Mr. Lindbergh, do you have questions for Mr. Farrell?
Yes, I do. On the first case that we were talking about with the lines over by the elevator, were both lines marked or was only one line marked?
Neither line was marked, sir. There was no locates called in.
They had been called in before, according to our records.
According to my
records. And there was two lines that were called in before, approximately a week and a half before, and only one line was located because one line went to the new office building and the other line went to the old office building there. That
Mr. Lindbergh, we have to remember you're kind of testifying. You have to ask him questions.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that's tough. So,
did you, when you were on site there, did you notice a gushing of water near the line, the MDU line that supposedly wasn't marked?
I can't say that I seen any water gushing. I'm sorry. No.
Could it have been that a temporary water line that was feeding the elevator got broken and that had to be fixed immediately? And that's why the excavation was done immediately?
Anything's possible. I didn't see the water gushing, sir. I don't see any of that. Nothing was said to me about any water gushing.
Did you notice how much traffic is on the road there, coming from the elevator or coming down 3rd Street there? Were any whiskers present from the MDU markings?
I did not see any whiskers, I'm sorry.
Then it's possible the truck traffic completely wiped them out?
Anything's possible, but the anything's possible.
Because we are you familiar with
all the dig tickets for this area?
No.
Dig ticket 131-324-43, 131-567-45, or 131-67-425. Those are all valid one-call tickets. Okay. You're not familiar with those?
What exhibit are they?
They're the one-call tickets that should be in the booklet.
You know what exhibit they are, Mr. Lindbergh?
No, I don't.
Can anybody help him out with that?
Read the numbers too fast.
Are these exhibit 16? Is that right? I didn't catch the numbers too, but 131-564-58.
A16 or B16?
A. That would be A.
Clarify that for the record.
And A.
I think it's 17, exhibit 17.
A17?
A17.
Oh, boy.
Is that correct, Mr. Lindbergh?
I don't know if it's helpful or not at all, but there will be a witness later who's more familiar with the scope of the one-call tickets and the kind of entire broad nature of this project. So
Mr. Lindbergh, he's already said he's not familiar with them?
That's fine.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Because we don't want to cut you off. Do you have more questions for him?
I'm on case number 886. Are you familiar with that locate number? And that is 131-67-425.
What exhibit is it, sir?
Number 7.
Okay.
A7 or B7?
B.
E?
It's for number 886 case.
Okay, and so that's B.
That locate ticket number was 131-567-425.
131-67-425.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Correct, I have that, yes.
You mentioned that Northern Excavating continued to work after hitting the line?
They had put some type of a clamp on it. I don't know what, I can't recall exactly the clamp they used, but they had bent the pipe back. There was no blowing gas. They continued to work. Yes, sir.
Would it be possible they continued work just to expose the line for when MDU personnel had to arrive to get it ready for them? Possibility?
Yeah, sure, that's possible, yep.
You mentioned you talked to Shannon Severson, and he was an operator of equipment?
That's who I spoke to, and that's who, he said he was the operator of the equipment.
Was that an operator of a shovel, a backhoe, excavator, loader, or what?
He was the operator that hit the line. He was on the track hole that hit the line.
I have, I disagree with that, but... could it have been possible that when this line was, you know, we have a good locate, that when the line was struck, could it be possible that they were probing for it and a probe went through the line?
No.
Are you sure?
It was ripped in half.
But could have been ripped in half when they probed through it so they could contain the gas from blowing?
No.
So
it was torn in half, and the one half was bent over.
Was it bent over to prevent gas from escaping?
Yes, it was.
But you didn't see the line ripped in half.
No, I did not.
And you're positive Shannon Severson was an operator?
The information that I got from your fellows that were on site was that he was the operator. I asked who the operator was, and this is the name that I was given.
On going back to the case on the first group there with the 2-inch line that was hit, are you familiar with the traffic on 3rd Street or from the elevator in Ross?
I frequent Ross very little, but yeah, there's some truck traffic on there, yes.
Were the lines marked with paint or did they have whiskers?
Again, there was no marks on the line at all. There was no locates called in.
That's all I have.
All right, thank you very much. Ms. Fury? How do you say your name? Fury? Okay.
No questions, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Farrell. Mr. Armstrong,
thank
you have another
you.
Witness.
Typically, we get to ask questions.
Oh, that's right. Mr. Chairman Kalk, do you have any questions of the witnesses?
Former chairman.
Commissioner Kalk.
Lehman, are you still out there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, this is Brian on the commission. I just had a couple questions, and my colleagues might have a couple. First off, thank you for your work in MDU. You guys are busy as heck up there and taking time out of your schedule to help us weed through some of the issues today. I just had a couple quick ones. For the first one, the 884, where there was alleged there was no locate, when you got there and the line was hit, you said the gas was leaking. Is that correct?
Correct.
Was it enough gas that you had to file a report with PHMSA?
I don't know who that is.
Okay, so there probably wasn't enough gas then. All right, I'm looking at you guys in the audience. But now, just curious, when you got there, anybody get hurt or anything?
Nobody was hurt, no.
Okay, and then are you the person to ask about how much damages it was to the facilities? Separate, that's someone else, I'm guessing. Okay. All I guess I really have is you testified that basically you came on the scene, you saw that the line had been hit, and you took control of it and stopped the for further damage. But you know, basically, had you ever seen this type of thing happen before in your experience?
Yes, I have.
And do you feel that if locates are done properly and the care required, that these kind of things can be avoided?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you, Lehman. No further questions for me.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Chairman Fedorchek.
Hi, Mr. Farrell, thank you. Just a couple follow-ups on that. Was there any evidence of care being used in either of these two strikes by the contractor to expose the line, or you know, was there any evidence of that when you got on the scene?
Not that I could see, no. They just, the first one, it looked like to me that they on the first one, there was no locates that I could see at all. And they just dug into the line. They did stop when they hit the line. Those two lines were not struck all the way through. They had holes in them, but they were not cut all the way through.
Okay.
The second line, the service line, that was torn in half, and
Okay.
When
Mr. Lindbergh was asking you it was bent over, help me understand that more. Is it common for contractors to, if they strike a line, bend it over after the fact, so less gas escapes? Is that how I'm understanding that?
There is some contractors out there. I've seen it before. They will take and bend it over, and they'll like take a vice grip or something in that order and clamp onto the line so it doesn't leak blowing gas anymore.
Is that effective?
It is somewhat, yes.
And is it dangerous? I mean, is that recommended, or is it better for contractors to just step away?
The contractor should step away, and if there is blowing gas, they should call 911.
Okay. They contacted you right away?
I was contacted. I don't know who. It goes through a call center, and they contact us.
Okay. So you were the first one on the scene?
Yes, I was.
And had the gas been shut off, so that was, or not?
On which one?
On the one where it was struck all the way through.
After he had bent it back, there was no blowing gas when I arrived.
Okay. You were confident that it was struck with a Traco, not, or whatever the large equipment was, not a probe. Is that because of the nature of the cut, or how were you so confident about that?
The rip in the pipe, the tear in the pipe. If you probe it, you're going to have a hole in the pipe, not a rip. It ripped the pipe.
Okay. It's impossible to rip a pipe with a probe, in your experience?
In my experience, yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Commissioner Chrisman.
Although you don't advise it, you said it can be somewhat effective when contractors bend these pipes over or vice grip them off. Is there a kind of a field method for fixing the kind of hole that you would expect to see if a pipe was damaged by a probe?
No.
So if they did think it was the right thing to do to stop the gas from leaking, might they have thought that if they had made a hole in it with a probe, that it was best to cut it off all the way and bend it over?
I don't know that. That's very dangerous to do that.
Okay. Then to the cuts at the elevator area, how far are those two facilities apart? The two lines at the elevator.
They were approximately a foot and a half to 2 feet.
And that was it a track hoe that was working in the area, or a loader of some type?
Let me take a quick look here to see. I believe it was a track hole. It was a track hole, sir.
Do you recall, was it a pretty big one? I mean, does one scoop of the bucket with the equipment they had take out pipe 2.5 feet apart, or is that?
Yeah, it was one bucket that took out both pipes.
And you have these exhibits in front of you, correct?
Yes.
So, looking at exhibit 17 in the A packet, that's this one call ticket that
17. I think it would be the B packet. Are you sure it's not the B packet, sir?
Just a minute, your counsel is looking at something.
And to clarify, I guess I apologize for this.
Mr. Farrell may not have the Exhibit 17 from the B packet. It was intended for use with a later witness, I guess, so he might not have that one available to him as it was added this morning.
And that was the A packet?
Correct.
So,
you can't ask him about it because you don't have it.
We can ask.
Maybe you can describe it to him.
We're looking at a one-call relocate ticket from the call date was September 13th with work to begin September 17th. And it appears to be that area. Now, I don't know, maybe it's some different area around the elevator, but it's on Railroad Avenue near First Street West.
That's not by the elevator.
That's not?
That's 2.5 blocks away.
Okay. Okay, so apparently there was no ticket called in for this area.
Well, we'll have to ask.
Okay.
And maybe he knows.
Do you know of any ticket that might have been called in that was just expired? Or is it your testimony that, as far as you know, there was no one-call ticket ever requested for that area?
I couldn't tell you that, sir. All I seen when I showed up was that there was no locate marks any place that I could see. That's all I can tell you.
Okay, thank you.
You were.
Mr. Armstrong, any further questions?
Just one follow-up. On either of these cases, Mr. Farrell, do you recall that anybody from Northern Excavating indicate to you that they had struck any of the lines with a probe?
No.
And I don't know if, maybe I'm not remembering correctly, but did they tell you it was a track hole, or was that just your impression from what you saw?
That was just my impression, what I saw.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Lindberg, any follow-up questions?
Did you talk to, on the second one, did you talk to Mr. Severson?
I spoke to somebody. I don't know for sure who it was, but I got all the information that I've, your address and the locate ticket number and all that.
So you don't really know what his position with the company was, whether he was a laborer or an operator of any equipment.
Who are we?
Mr. Severson.
Mr. Severson?
Right.
I was told that Mr. Severson, I asked who the operator was, and that's what I was told, was that this Mr. Severson was the operator.
By who told you?
The gentleman that was giving me the information, and I assume that it was him, but I do not know. I didn't get the gentleman that was giving me the information. He was a representative of the Northern Excavation. That's all I can tell you.
If that gentleman was the foreman and he told you Mr. Severson was operating, could it mean he was operating a shovel possibility while he was looking for the MDU line?
I asked who the operator was. Usually when I ask the operator, that means they're running equipment, not running a shovel.
But it is possible that he could have been operating the shovel. And did you ask him who hit the line?
I did. And that was the operator. Mr. Severson.
He said he hit the line. Mr. Severson.
The operator is the one who hit the line, and that was Mr. Severson.
But you asked him that. Or did you ask the other person?
I asked whoever I was getting the information from, sir.
But you don't know who that was.
I do not.
Could he have been the operator of the probe when you got that information?
There was no probe.
I seen no sign of any probe at all. Nobody mentioned anything about a probe, sir.
But you didn't ask about that.
Pardon me?
You didn't ask how it was hit or anything. You just saw that the line was bent over and and to keep the gas from escaping. Did you just assume that it was just broke entirely? Did you just assume that it was?
Mr. Lindbergh, do you want to give him a chance to ask the question or answer the question that you've asked? Mr. Farrell, do you have a question? An answer to that question?
Which question? I'm sorry.
Did you assume it was just hit by the backhoe, since the backhoe was right there?
Yes.
That's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lindbergh. Ms. Furry?
Yes, Your Honor.
This is Patrick Fond with Commission Advisory Staff. And the question I have for you is, how long did it take you to arrive at the scene? How long was the gas blowing in case number 13885?
13885.
I don't think
we're... Where they had the two lines, the 2-inch and the 3-inch line?
The 2-inch and the 3-inch? Yeah, I left from here. I believe it was... Oops. Just give me a minute here. I got to look my... Oh, here we go. Yeah. No. Let's see. I was notified at 11:30. I arrived at 12:30, and I had it squeezed off at 3:00.
And another follow-up question: do you know what the gas pressure was in those lines?
Approximately 18 pounds.
That's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Kalk?
No, ma'am.
Mr. Fedorchik?
Nothing.
Mr. Christman? Mr. Armstrong?
Nothing else.
Mr. Lindbergh?
Nothing.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone. And thank you, Mr. Farrell. And now you really are released.
All right. Great.
Mr. Armstrong, do you have another witness?
Called Dana Baxter.
Mr. Baxter, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Did you hear me give Mr. Farrell the admonition about the penalties for perjury?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Do you understand those penalties?
I do.
Okay. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give concerning the matter being heard will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
All right. Go ahead, Mr. Armstrong.
Mr. Baxter, just before we get going, I'd like to let you know the first questions I'm going to ask you deal with, I believe, what will be in what you guys know as your morning binder, and they'll deal with case numbers ending in 884 and 230, and I'll let you know when I switch over to case number ending in 229, okay?
Okay.
Could you state and spell your name, please?
Dana Baxter. It's D-A-N-A. B-A-X-T-E-R.
And where are you testifying from?
Williston at the MDU office.
Do you work for MDU?
Yes, I do.
What is your position?
I am the working gas lead.
What do you do in that position?
Install and maintain gas distribution service lines and also respond to damaged line emergencies.
And how long have you been in that position?
Almost 5 years.
I'd like to talk to you first about a September 13, 2013 problem with the natural gas line at Main and Railroad Avenue in Ross, what we have as GS-13-884. If you could turn to Exhibit 2, please. Be A2 for people in the room.
Thank you.
Is this a document that you prepared?
Yes, it is.
Could you tell us what this document is?
Report of the damage to company-owned property.
What damage is this document describing?
Damage. Damage to a one-inch line.
And on the top it says September 13th at 11 a.m.?
Yes.
In part C of that document, is that information filled out from the people on site who get it from the site?
Yes, it is. And in this instance, I'm usually on site, but I couldn't be that day. So this was collected by people who are working for me, and I took their form and filled out this form.
Okay. So when you filled this form out, it was gathered from information that you received from MDU personnel on site that day. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
In your position, are you aware of what has to be done to repair, what had to be done to repair this line?
Yes, I am.
And what had to be done?
In this instance, they had to put a permacert cap on its mechanical fitting to stop the flow of gas. Basically, they end up retiring a portion of the line.
This part C of the complaint or of the report indicates that does not indicate a line locate number. If there had been a valid locate, would that have been included in your report?
Yes, it would.
Okay. I'd like to move on to case number 230. Moving your attention to exhibit A10, it'd be 10 for you in the morning binder. Is this a similar document you prepared in response to damage that occurred on April 30th, 2014?
Could you give me an exhibit number on that?
10.
Okay. Okay, yes, it is.
Okay. And am I correct that you actually were out at site on this day?
Yes, I was.
Could you tell us what you found when you got to the site?
On that one, they had dug through its one-inch main. It was in the road. There was their track hoe there, a pile of dirt, and there was an old flag down back down the street. I don't know. There really wasn't any marks to see.
On this one, in Part C, you have a line locate number listed as 14030557. Do you see that in Part C of Exhibit 10?
Yes.
And that line locate ticket is in Exhibit 12.
Okay.
Did you evaluate whether the damage on that day was within that locate ticket?
It was not. It was beyond the ticket date.
Okay, and why do you say that?
Because at the time, there was only a 10-day from the time they called in.
The Exhibit 12 indicates that the extent of work will be excavation site on an unknown side of the road, locate 2nd Street East from Central Avenue North to the railroad tracks. Do you see that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is the one that was actually outside their locate boundaries.
Okay, and if you say it was outside, why do you say that?
I don't really investigate that, but I was told that it was just for the street to the west of there, not down Second Street.
And did you, at the site, determine how far away the damage was from Second Street?
Yeah, the hit was from the center line of the street, was 196 feet down Second Street.
It was 196 feet east of Second Street?
Yes.
And if you turn to Exhibit 13.
Okay.
Is this a document that you prepared kind of mapping out how far the damage was from Second Street?
Yes, it is.
And you mentioned that there was a track hoe at present, and was it Northern Excavating that was out there performing the work?
Yes, it is.
What had to be done to repair the damage for this incident?
On this one, we had to dig back and to where we had good pipe on both sides, remove that section of pipe and replace it with new.
That's all the questions I have for you on those two cases, Mr. Baxter. I'd like to move now to case number 229, which would be in the afternoon binder. Do you have that in front of you?
I do now, yeah.
If you could turn to Exhibit 12.
Okay.
That would be B12.
Yep.
Does this report describe another incident that you responded to in the town of Ross?
Yes, it does.
And when was that?
It was on 5-6 of 2014.
Okay. Could you tell us what you found when you responded to that incident?
This incident, by the time I got in there, the service guy from Stanley had already had the line squeezed, but there was a... it was a 1-inch main again, had been dug through with the track hoe. The one side of the ditch... You could tell the pipe was tore, like it's pulled apart, and the other side was bent. It was a one-way feed, so they only had to squeeze it in one spot.
Your description on Exhibit 12 indicates that tore line in half with the track hoe. Is that what your impression of the scene was?
Yes, it is. The trench that was there was the same width as the bucket. The track hoe was still sitting right there.
Was that a
North? Our servicemen had talked to the operator, and they said that they had dug through the line.
And was that Northern Excavating equipment that was on site?
Yes, it was.
And I understand from your report that there was a line locate that had been called in that area and around the time?
Yes.
Were there markings in place?
There were some. There was a few whisker biscuits. There was a little bit of paint, but they didn't maintain their marks very well, which is the responsibility of them.
And by they, are you talking about Northern Excavating?
Yes.
Okay, when you were out there, did you take some pictures of the markings that were in place?
Yes, I did.
And are those included attached to Exhibit 11?
Yes, they are.
Using those pictures, and there's numbers on that upper left-hand corner of those pictures, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and 6, could you walk us through what those pictures show? I know that number 1 is not very clear, but could you just walk us through those pictures?
Yeah, number 1, it just shows a whisker biscuit, and you can see that there's a lines up with where the damage location is.
So where it says whisker and it has an arrow, they're there's a whisker there. You just can't see it that good in the picture.
Yeah.
And then if you look past it, there's a track hoe and a white house.
Yeah.
Okay. Could you move on to number two, please?
Number two is basically showing the same thing. There's a whisker biscuit in front of the truck.
Is that what you can see under the bumper of the truck?
Yeah, it's real close to the bumper.
Okay. Can you move on to number three, please?
Okay.
What does that show?
Shows another whisker biscuit close to the excavation site, and if you line up the one in front of the truck with this one, you can see that their locates are actually on the marks.
So are you saying that the whiskers that you saw lined up with kind of in a straight line, they would lead towards where the damage occurred?
Yes.
Number four, is that just a kind of close-up picture of the whisker and what it looks like?
Yeah, that is. That's the one that's in front of the truck.
Number five, what does that show?
Number five, I'm just showing the track hoe, and just there is, let me look at that because there was a little paint. I really don't think there's much paint there. It's just basically showing that there is no paint.
Okay. And number six, is that a picture of the damage?
Yes, it is.
And is that the line that was damaged? The goldish-looking, copper-looking line?
Yeah.
What is that circled just to the right of the picture on the line?
That's where the serviceman put a clamp on it, and it squeezes the pipe so it cuts the flow of gas.
Okay, so that's where that line should be connected and go across there, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And is this a trench that appeared to have been the track hoe operating in?
Yes.
Did it appear to you that the site had been appropriately marked but not appropriately maintained? Is that how I understood your testimony?
Yes, in my opinion, yeah.
And why do you say that?
Well, what little paint there usually is paint marks, and I believe if you looked at ELM's photos that they had marked it, but there had been rain and stuff in the area, and their marks just weren't maintained.
And by their marks, are you talking about Northern Excavating or ELM?
Well, ELM's marks weren't maintained, but that's the responsibility of Northern Excavating to keep them maintained.
What had to be done to repair this line?
Well, a serviceman had got there, squeezed it, made it safe, and we had to dig back a little farther to get to a good pipe that wasn't stretched and cut out the damaged section and replace it with new and hook up the locate wire again.
That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Mr. Lindbergh, do you have questions for Mr. Baxter?
Yes. When MDU receives a one-call locate, does MDU mark the lines out there, or do you have a subcontractor or ELM, or who marks MDU lines?
Up there, we have ELM as a contractor who marks our lines.
Was it one person or several people that marked the lines?
I would have no idea.
Do you work with them constantly on a daily basis, or?
I really don't work with them at all. Occasionally I see them when there's a hit line, because we call them to do some investigating, and sometimes they come out, sometimes they don't. It depends if the ticket's good or not.
You were not on site for case number 884, which was exhibit number 2A2.
this is yours. No, I was not.
And you're familiar, there was a locate ticket for that?
My understanding there, yes, there was an expired locate ticket for that area.
Are you sure it was expired?
It says in my notes that it was August 15th and there was no respot call then.
So you're not, you're sure it may not have been expired, or was that outside the parameter?
No, that one was outside the locate ticket time date, which back then was only.
But you don't know on the locate of what area was asked to be located. You're just there to see what damage was done.
No, I don't know the area called in for the locate. The expired, I usually don't check that.
Are you familiar with a letter that was written from Northern Excavating to Julie Prescott of the Public Utilities Division about Northern Excavating calling in to get a locate for item number, case number 229, and MDU refused?
Mr. Lindbergh, is that an exhibit?
It's exhibit 16.
Okay, that'll help them. 16, A16 or B16?
B16.
Okay.
B16.
That's the afternoon packet, Mr. Baxter.
Yeah, I was not aware of it, but I have it here in front of me now.
You mentioned the contractor is responsible for maintaining marks.
Yes.
That EOM or MDU puts in.
Yes.
Is that in, who sets those rules?
Well, that's actually the law. So I would assume the state or the Public Service Commission.
If there's an area where there's extremely a lot of traffic, cars or utilities, don't you feel it's into the best interest that when it's flagged, that it's flagged every few feet instead of what the pictures indicate, it's 50 to 100 feet, which is way too far, and the traffic dictates what can happen to those marks?
It wasn't nearly that much, but I'm sure that there was paint in between them also. You have to check ELM's pictures to be sure, but they're pretty good about painting in between everything and putting down a lot of paint.
How far do you usually put the marks? Whether they're, what determines if you put whiskers or paint?
I don't do any of it, so I couldn't tell you.
Does MDU have any policy with EOM on how they go about marking these?
I would have no idea. I just put in and repair the line, so.
I understand that. But if there's, an issue where, if there is a few breaks that are occurring, that shouldn't there be some correspondence maybe by all parties that, we need more whiskers and we need more paint.
I think between Northern Excavating, ELM, and us, that'd be great if everybody would do that.
Right. Okay.
I mean, we don't want our lines damaged. If there's any way we can help to prevent that, we're all for it.
Yes, exactly. And nobody wants to hit anything.
No.
On those pictures, on exhibit number 11, you know, it's pretty hard to judge if those are whiskers, you know, or what, you know, from, but it's, they look pretty far apart, you know, and then with traffic going back and forth, it's, the marks could have been put closer together, don't you feel?
Well, I'm sure there was plenty of paint in between them, and yeah, I agree that it's a bad area, but, you know, the marks need to be maintained, too.
Did you talk to any of the foreman or superintendent on the job on any of the locates, specifically number 229?
229 is the one from 913. Is that correct?
May 6th, 14.
It's the May 6th of 2014.
Okay.
And is there an exhibit number on that one?
12 is his report. It'd be B12.
12.
Yeah, okay. I got two of these real close together, so I'm going to have to look at my notes on this one. Okay. On that one, actually, the service guys talked to the operator on that one from Stanley.
So you had no discussions with any of the foreman or superintendent on site for Northern?
Not until I left, no, because the operator was there when we were done repairing it and thanked us for showing up.
So on case number number 230, which is number 10, there you didn't talk to any of Northern's officials either, right?
On that one? It was, I had an operator's name of Jody Meller, which I'm pretty sure that was the operator. I spoke to him briefly.
Did he have any comment?
No, not really. But again, he just thanked us for showing up and getting it fixed.
I have no other questions.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Ferre?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Dana, for your testimony. I just have a couple things. The first two, 884 and 230, where there was no locates, you just highlighted the point that at that time the state law said locates are only good for 10 days, correct?
Yes.
Okay, got it. And then the second or the third one, 229, I thought you highlighted something I think that is very important, that you talked about maintaining the marks as the responsibility of the excavator. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And so whether it be a lot of trucks coming and going or whatever it might be, it's the responsibility of the excavator, clearly in North Dakota state law, to maintain the marks. Is that correct?
Yes.
Because your pictures, I think, are very compelling. What would you think about companies that don't participate in North Dakota One Call?
Well, I don't think much of it, I guess, because it's something that's very important, not just to, especially in case of gas service, it's a public safety issue. You know, I mean, it's a personal safety issue more when it comes to power, because that person can get killed, you know, just as easily. But when you get in a blowing gas situation, I think it's, it's a bigger public safety issue. I think it's very important.
You know, you live out in western North Dakota. Have you seen a, let me rephrase, how much notification or understanding do you see, whether it's in TV or radio, about the importance of one call and the system out there? Do you get a lot of publicity on that, or is that something you never hear about out there?
Well, actually, I don't watch TV, but I do hear the radio ads, and there's always something. I even gotten stuff in the mail, so, and even with your bill, there's always something in there, and there's billboards, and it's pretty prevalent everywhere.
Okay. I think that's really it, Dan. I think you made your points, and thank you for your work with MDU.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Fedorchuk.
Dana, thank you for your testimony. How you work with a lot of different contractors, I'm assuming, and see their work. How do others maintain the markings?
Well, it all depends. There's instances like in a rain situation that washes out a lot of the marks, and they'll actually call in for a respot, or else they will go out and try and paint their marks themselves, you know, before they do get faded to where they can't see them.
Is this something that takes a fair amount of commitment? I mean, do you see contractors out there doing this every day, making sure if they're not done with the job that the marks are visible, or how big of a deal is this?
Honestly, probably back when it was the 10-day, not so much, because usually the marks would hold up, but on the 21 days, some do, but usually they call for a respot.
So that's the other alternative, is if you can't see them anymore, call and have them remarked.
Yeah, which I would suggest. I mean, you don't want to make the mistake, so.
Do you think there's confusion out there about the contractor's responsibility in this manner, in this matter?
I don't know. I think sometimes there is, but with all the public service and everything, I don't understand why they don't take it upon themselves to go get a book and read through it, I guess, so. I mean, it's all the information's in there, and it is a law, so.
Okay. That's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Christman.
Not chairman, but.
I keep trying to give that job away. Commissioner.
Regarding the Exhibit 16 that Mr. Lindbergh brought up, the letter that Northern Excavating had sent to the commission on the 23rd of May of 2014, did the company request to relocate in this area, or am I misunderstanding that?
I guess. I don't really know. I'm not familiar with that letter.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong.
Nothing further.
Mr. Lindbergh.
No, I have no other questions.
Okay. Ms. Ferreira.
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Calk.
No, ma'am.
Chairman Fedorchuk.
No.
Commissioner Christman. All right. Thank you, Mr. Baxter. Can he be dismissed, too?
Yes. Your Honor, if we could at this time, my next witness is a rather lengthy witness. It'll be Paul Riley. I don't know if it would be a time for maybe a five-minute break.
All right. Well, if that's okay with the commissioners?
Yes, that's good.
All right. 5 minutes.
Hey, Mitch. Can I see you, too? I just want to talk about the case breakdown, like what goes away. Or maybe I talk to Casey. I'll talk to Casey. Casey.
We usually don't
guys
get started.
On the phone, you don't need to stick around unless you want to.
Seems all messed up to me. Like, okay, so if I'm understanding this correctly, we originally had the 84, 85, and 230 for the morning, because those were all
notice violations.
Those are notice violations, right. Okay, so I'm looking at the complaints.
Yeah, the complaints, the way that they did them is the 5, 8, and 6. They didn't, when the complaints were initially brought, they didn't write. They didn't separate them out, so they kind of wrote all the complaints on the same complaint, So then what happened was there isn't separate prayer for relief. It's just these are all saying this is all digging ones. 884, 885, and 886. Okay. Are these all, the ones that are, so 84, 85, I'm trying to break them down. Which ones are the excavation notice, are the careful and prudent manner? And why aren't they broken down in the complaint that way?
I don't know. The complaints were not the same.
You guys are still being
this one.
Okay, thank you.